If you think about your daily life, how often do you actually stop and look at the punctuation that you're using? How often do you pay attention to a full stop that you do use in a text message that maybe doesn't require one? How often do you look at the advertisement that is flashing up on your screen and you realize there's an exclamation mark or there isn't one? How often do you actually still set an apostrophe when you dash off a quick text message or an email? So punctuation is all around us, but we tend to not really pay attention to a small thing of text that is actually really, really important in creating structure and in introducing emotions and helping us feel and think, understand and communicate. In my podcast series, I was trying to stop and have a little look at those signs. I looked at the history of punctuation. Where did it come from? I looked at different kinds of signs, their identity, how they're being perceived, how they're being used. I looked at punctuation in literature, punctuation in holy texts. But what I haven't done a lot is to consider the future. What is the future of punctuation? In my last episode, I was talking to typography designer Thierry Fétivaux, who is introducing new feeling signs into children's texts so that adults that are reading out to children can perform emotions, so that children learn to, I guess, feel and hear at the same time. Now, I have had another conversation with, again, a typographer who has developed a set of new glyphs he calls typoji, and which he hopes will help negotiate ambiguity, the ambiguity that we experience in writing per se, because it's disembodied. We don't have voices or facial expressions or physical gestures to add meaning to our written words, and that is perhaps magnified by digital communication, where you don't even have the handwriting anymore that can tell you about the feeling state of the other person. So I would like to invite you to listen to my conversation with Walter Bohatsch, an Austrian typography designer, who has been thinking about what we could do in terms of punctuation in the future. I hope you will enjoy the session, and let's get started. Welcome to Standing on Points, the History and Culture of Punctuation. I'm Florence, your host, and as you probably know, I am totally in love with all things dots and dashes. But I'm not the only person who is a huge punctuation fan. Today, I'm talking to another punctuation aficionado, Walter. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Yes, good afternoon. My name is Walter Bohatsch, and I'm living in Austria, in Vienna. I have been working in the field of design in several areas the last 35 years, and I am still interested in typography, though I am not anymore an active designer. I stopped doing that a couple of years ago, but nevertheless, I'm involved with typographic projects or artistic projects which have to do a lot with language. And if we talk about language, you know, we are involved in type and typography. This project, typology project, was more or less the I would say, a present to myself. But it was executed in the office I was running. There were two other people involved in this project, and it took us at least 2.5 years. I think this project was in the office on and off. So as we could do it on an everyday basis.
Okay, and it's great to talk to you today because I'm so interested in the set of characters that you have developed or have suggested or artistically played with. Can you tell us a little bit about the signs, the as you call them, a few more glyphs?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, it began, with how shall I mean, there are several points where we started off, but since we are I was and am working in the field of communication, I found out that a large amount of energy flowing into communication with clients and with project leaders was that when you explained something, people were asking you most of the time for an explanation of the explanation. So that was, I think, language to me is a big thing. It's a jungle, and it really depends which path you take. And so there was this idea coming up, what is happening if we would have in the written language, if we would have the chance to have special typographic signs, glyphs, to express a certain mood, a certain situation, which when you talk, even if you when you talk to somebody, even if you don't see the person, like we don't see each other right now, but and we don't know each other, but you can you get a certain picture from my speech, from my voice, if I talk loud, if I talk aggressive, and so on, but if you would, for example, if I say hello, I can also say hello, Florence. So it's a big difference, but if you would have to write what I just said in a fraction of a second, you would need maybe a page to get this point across, what you kind of feel. So the question came up, what kind of terms, Begriffe, terms in communication we could choose and develop a typographic sign for it. Is it now, is it am I optimistic, or do I mean that ironically what I say? It's that's that was the beginning, and so the first thing which we were looking for was we wrote down hundreds of terms for which we thought it would be interesting to have such a sign. But of course, we said we have to limit this, because otherwise it's a never-ending project. And there I have to, really explain or tell you, nobody commissioned this project. It is a project which we choose, and So it's more an artistic approach. Yeah? I mean, we never, you know, we never thought we are giving a scientific answer to this question we asked. Yeah? For us, this is was for me it was a very interesting experience, yeah? And an experiment. Yeah? But there is no, you know, scientific proof if this whole phenomenon is relevant, or that we can that these typologies are a perfect solution to what we asked to this semantic problem which we have in language. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yes, well, I was so interested to see what you were picking, those 30 terms. So there is, for example, surprise, curiosity, authority, outrage, integrity, skepticism, understatement, so sagacity. I thought that's a very interesting term to pick. They're quite subtle, and some of them strike me as more cognitive, like maybe, you know, sagacity or rejection, and some are a bit more spontaneous, like sympathy or enthusiasm, or sort of physical.
Yes. Well, I mean, you see, there were three people in this project, yeah? And one of the these three people were three generations. I was the oldest one. Yeah. Then there was a woman, she was about in her 50s. And then there was a young man, he was in his 25th year. Yeah. And to me, it was, and again, I'm back to language. Yeah. To me, this it still is very important to have the chance to talk to different age groups, yeah? Because I find out, you know, that definitely within the language, you know, how somebody speaks, yeah? you get a feeling, you get an idea about his reality, his or her reality, mm-hmm. Yeah. And it might be possible, you know, that somebody says, why do you make a sign for boredom? I have never been bored. I don't know what is boring, what it means. So maybe some of these terms completely disappear in the next 10 years, you know. And, and for example, I use these typologies in my handwriting several times, and I found out some of them I don't use at all, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that is again very individual.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Somebody might find out, I mean, here I have 30 possibilities, but none of it is for me.
Yeah. And you were mentioning the difference between emoticons and emoji and the typologies, because emojis really puzzle me. I still really don't know what to think about them, because they function like punctuation, like, you know, standard punctuation coming at the end of a sentence. Very often replace punctuation. They replace a full stop or an exclamation mark, for example. That if the exclamation mark gives intensity to what has been said, you know, maybe now we will use an emoji that looks angry or that looks extremely happy.
Yes.
And yet it's not a punctuation mark. It's also not an icon. It's a picture. So I was wondering, maybe you can tell me a little bit about your thoughts between the typologies that you suggest and standard punctuation, which is abstract characters, and something like an emoji, which is very visual, but can also become a little bit complicated because now there's so many of them.
Well, I mean, you just said it, you know, an emoji is basically an illustration. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the typologies like every letter, like every
Mm.
character, an abstract sign. You don't know, I mean, if you don't know the meaning of the typologies, they don't make any sense. So you need to know the meaning. Yeah, you cannot interpret them. Yeah, because they are abstract. Yeah, so
Right.
you have to know if you want to use them. Yeah, you have to learn them, like you learned every letter. I mean, we all know. You know, to me, I mean, the alphabet is more like a system for decoding. Yeah, I mean, if I talk to you in English now, so we understand each other. I mean, if I write to you in English, because we know the language, you know. But if I talk to you in Turkish, for example, or even in any other language, I still know what is an A, B, C, D, and so on, because in this language the same letters are used, yeah. But their combination, you know, is I even could read something, but I don't know the meaning, yeah, because I don't speak the language. Yeah? So you have, so that's the big difference between typologies and emojis. And an emoji, it's an interesting phenomenon in our time, and I think it's going to implode. Because there will be too many, and one day there will be too many. I mean, you cannot translate Ulysses or some good book, yeah, with emojis. You know, you cannot give a speech in emoji language, but you can, for example, use the typologies in a speech or in a book, yeah, to express skepticism, enthusiasm, whatever, you know, for whatever they stand for. And I think, you know, it took us 3,000 years or more, you know, to get away from hieroglyphs, yeah? And now we are back to
Absolutely.
So I don't know, you know, I have my doubts, you know, if this it's you know, it's a phenomenon, and it's a phenomenon which came up because of the devices.
For sure.
You cannot use emojis in a telephone call now. How can we use them?
And the emoji, in a way, is, I feel like they are helping us to pad our communication to, because we're worried, you know, that's why we have punctuation, that's why we have typojis or emojis, because we're worried how something comes across. And I was wondering with your typojis whether you are seeking to encode what the writer has been feeling or has been thinking, or whether it's in order to have an effect on the reader, or both, maybe.
Yes. You have the book? I mean, in the beginning of the book, there are some sentences. Soon you will know more. Yeah, the sentence, soon you will know more. And if you put whatever typology at the end of the sentence, I mean, the connotation, if you know that the typology, the connotation is decoded, yeah, because you know it's meant surprisingly, or it's meant as a secret, or it's meant ironically, right? And yeah, this I you know, again, it's an experiment, and it polarized the project, and also me as an individual quite a lot within the typographic I mean, not typographic scene, but in certain typographic circles, you know, where I'm not anymore really active. You know? But the reaction we got was very interesting because I mean, there was very critic reaction and there was very positive reaction. Yeah? Mm-hmm. And the very interesting thing is that, you know, we in the book, you can see we invited quite a lot of people and the response was fantastic. It was, we never expected that so many people would follow us on this, mm-hmm. on this project. Yeah.
Yes, I have so many questions. I don't even know where to start, but I find it very interesting that you say it polarized people in the scene, your office and yourself, because as I was working with the book and looking at it, and it's very beautiful, maybe we can come to speaking about the book in a minute. Because I'm a literary critic, I was thinking, oh my God, I don't want ambiguity to disappear, because this is one of the, I guess, of a raison d'être of the typologies is to negotiate ambiguity, maybe not, you know, cancel it, but to do something to ambiguity that I, as a literary critic who, you know, who thrive on interpretation and so on, I felt resistance against. So I'm interested in the polarization. Why do you think the typology and maybe punctuation in general can really rile us up? Because it's not just the typology, you know, when someone doesn't put a dot or doesn't use an apostrophe properly, people get very angry.
Yes, I mean, maybe an example, you know, for we asked several writers, yeah, to donate us with some text sample, yeah, and not one writer, yeah, several, you know, we got the reaction, listen, I don't need any more special signs, you know? I have enough, you know, with an asterisk, you know, and please, even if I, you know, have exclamation marks or so, I don't need more signs. So these signs, these typologies, were almost seen as an attack, you know, yes, against language, written language, yeah? Mm-hmm. Because, so that was a negative reaction. A positive reaction was, you know, that quite a lot of people said, fantastic, now I don't need anymore, you know, a blinking face or something. Mm-hmm. I have a typographic image, a typographic sign, a glyph. Yeah? Mm-hmm. And so, and even within the small group, you know, we very often questioned the whole thing, what we were doing here, right, because we were used, you know, in our daily life, people come up, clients come up, commission us with a certain job dimension, yeah, mm-hmm. because they want us to solve a problem, yeah.
Yes.
But here, you know, we didn't have to solve a problem because we didn't know the problem. You know, that was a very funny thing is we don't know the problem, but we have the solution.
Wow. Yeah. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because and what somebody is doing with this typologies, yeah, is who knows, you know? I mean, there is, if you read the in the book, there are three essays. You know? One essay which I wrote, it's more or less about the project, but there is an essay by the name is Ernst Strohal, yeah, and he's very much involved in games. What is a game? Yeah? And he if you read his text, you know, he writes a text which is written 2076, mm-hmm. yeah, or something like this. Mm-hmm. Yeah? And it's a lot of humor in it. Yeah? Or if you read the text by Gabriele Reiter, who is also involved, a philosopher actually, and art theorist, she looks at this problem from a completely different standpoint. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I really enjoyed that the book is a cooperative effort of people from different disciplines and different ages and different cultures and languages and so on. So I understood that it wasn't only your office, but the entire book is a team effort, I suppose. And perhaps you can tell me a little bit about the book. As I go through, there's a couple of pages for each sign, for example, disappointment or skepticism. And then there are example sentences. Sometimes they work quite sort of on point, and sometimes I feel there's a bit of irony in them as well, so it's very playful. And then there are images, so photos rather.
Yes, yeah.
Perhaps you can unpick this relationship of these different elements a little bit.
Yes. Well, why we used photos was because we thought we're talking actually about a gesture. You know, language is always full of gestures. Yeah? Mm-hmm. And so we thought we pick some photos to which actually show or give you an idea what is optimism, for example. Mm-hmm. Yeah? And again, you know, these pictures, and if you know how many pictures are available today, mm-hmm. just to select these pictures, mm-hmm. this alone was an enormous amount of work, you know, mm-hmm. because first of all, again, the pictures were selected by three generations, you know. I didn't know certain people. The younger ones didn't know certain people. Yeah? Mm-hmm. So we decided, you know, okay, from every generation or some, of course, everybody knew the Pope, yeah? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
or the Dalai Lama. Yeah? Mm-hmm. And why do you pick the Dalai Lama for outrage? You know.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Again, it's a little theater, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a little theater which we have going on there, and the very interesting thing. For example, I have a brother who is an actor, yeah. And we first of all thought we ask him, yeah. We make a photo session shooting, yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. For these 30 typologies. Mm-hmm. And we tried that. It's impossible. You know, you would need weeks to do it. You cannot do within a couple of hours, go through 30 different different gestures. Yeah? Mm-hmm. And so then we thought, okay, I mean, we go back to what we find in the net. Mm. And so organization was a big part behind this whole project. Yeah?
Yes, as I was looking at it, it's really like a object of art, the whole book, and the arrangements. You can really tell that it's like a piece in and of itself, with a relationship to itself and all the different parts playing together. And you mentioned that's so interesting that you were thinking of having your brother as an actor embody the marks or the emotions or the cognitive states. So sometimes I feel that there might be a relationship between the word or the emotion, the cognitive state, and the shape. For example, seduction is very curvy and it's sort of like a round heart, a round body, or authority. I felt like authority reminded me of like a swastika almost, you know, or outrage is sort of an angry flash of lightning. Was there some kind of representative aspect for you as well, or are they coincidental?
Well, I mean, it's more or less it is coincidental, but when we you see, I mean, I have to explain, you know, how this debauchery is actually developed. Yeah? Mm-hmm. I made a lot of hundreds, thousands of hand drawings, very spontaneous hand drawings, mm-hmm. On a huge sheet of paper, and to see what, when I say outrage, you know, how would my hand move, you know?
Right.
My hand moves automatically different if I say admiration. Mm. Yeah? Mm. I mean, my hand moves different, yeah? Mm-hmm. Slower or faster, you know? And when you begin to do something like this, yeah? And you have in mind, for example, enthusiasm, yeah? Mm-hmm. Whatever, you know, you begin at this point when I was doing that, where do I begin? Yeah? Do I write from the top to the bottom? Mm-hmm. Do I begin on the left or the right side? At this time, there was no thought under each mm-hmm. typology. Yeah? Mm-hmm. That came later on when we said, okay, we definitely use all the rules we have, the existing rules for punctuation, which means we put the typology at the end of a sentence, yeah? Mm-hmm. And not any, it's just on the end of the sentence. And like a question mark, yeah? Mm-hmm. Or exclamation mark, yeah? We use the tot, yeah? Mm-hmm. Which, kind of harmonized the group or made it more a family. Yeah? Yes. Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, outrage is different than yearning. Mm-hmm. Yes. And mm-hmm. And sometimes, you know, they are bears, for example, pessimism, optimism, or antipathy and sympathy. Yeah? Mm-hmm. They are not always bears. Hmm?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. I like what you say about the kind of basic form of the question mark or exclamation mark with the dot, because I'm currently writing, I have been writing for half a year about the exclamation mark, so I think maybe I see them everywhere. But on your website, you have all the signs superimposed, all the glyphs superimposed, and it's very beautiful. You can sort of click on ignorance, for example, and then the red sign appears out of the superimposition of all of them. Mm-hmm. However, there is one black. So they're all in gray, like exaggeration, understatement, and so on. And once you click, it becomes red. But there's an exclamation mark, which forms the baseline of all of them, and that is black. And so I was wondering whether, as you said, you picked that because of the final being a final punctuation mark, but also the dot, which is uniting them all. Is there anything else that maybe, you know, you felt that offered a kind of basic form or expression? Because the exclamation mark is the strongest sign of here are feelings, you know,
for punctuation. Mm-hmm. Yes, I mean, we used the exclamation mark to show, you know, the relation,
mm-hmm.
To the approaches,
mm-hmm.
Which means, I mean, the exclamation mark, was used to show you can use the approaches like this song. Yep. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. To flag up feeling, to flag up thought, to introduce emotion and the senses and the body into a sort of disembodied way of communicating.
Again, now, I what was the question? I didn't understand that.
That the exclamation mark I guess the strongest sign of emotion, the strongest punctuation mark connoting emotion,
yes.
Whatever kind of emotion.
Yeah. Yes.
Because other signs, I believe, for example, like a dot, 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 or parentheses or a colon, that can be emotional too, however one wants to use them. But first and foremost, a dot is in order to structure a sentence from a grammatical point of view. There's a hell of a lot of emotion in a dot or in the lack of a dot. But the exclamation mark is the one mark that is really in your face feeling.
Yes, yes. Definitely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Maybe quotation signs.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You can also, you know, with a quotation, you can also, I think, emphasize quite a large amount of feeling. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
But not really with a question mark. Yeah?
Right. Mm-hmm. And maybe my last question would be, what is there practical use? Like, I mean, I understand that there's a certain ambiguity in terms of the intention and the what it is. So it is an artistic project, but it's also something for yourself. However, there's also a book about it, you know, there's a website and it is public. So on the website, you write, in a present era of fake news, renewed importance is being placed on statements' clarity and unambiguousness. So I was wondering whether there's a part of you that does think this could be something for, you know, general communication, not just you with your own circle, but for all of us.
Well, you know, like that would be great, you know, if this would be for all of us. It would be great. But I'm not deciding that, you know.
Mm-hmm. So there is a part that is serious about suggesting.
Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that we never knew, you know, like, would that work, you know? And we don't have any guarantee, you know. The only reaction, I mean, the first reaction we got from the people whom we invited to give us text samples, and we wrote to, I think, 75 people, and surprisingly, we got back quite a lot of samples. So we were very surprised, but it could have also happened, you know, and which some people also said, please leave me alone with that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
Please leave me alone, like the writers. I have enough problem with an exclamation mark. Yeah?
Yes, mm-hmm. I can.
So,
well, I was talking to a French typographer a couple of weeks ago who was suggesting what he calls feeling signs for children's stories. And that's for kind of embodying and pronouncing feelings when reading to children, which, and he was also serious about it. He thought, you know, it is available, you can buy the typeface and so on. And there's another community called Progressive Punctuation who are quite active actually at making suggestions for new marks, because like you also say, so much now is working through text and we send these billions of messages. So this is, it's super important for us. It's, and it's always social, you know, we always want to be understood and understand. So I find it really exciting to be doing this work right now, where, you know, there's new technology, new ways of engaging, and we are kind of, we keep making and we keep thinking about it. All right. Then, Walter, thank you so much.
Can you, this organization or this group, I don't know them, but maybe you can send me a link to that. Yeah?
For sure, certainly. And I was, I hope I have a conversation with them as well. We've been in touch. And I find it really beautiful how, you know, punctuation seems to be a quirky, a little bit weird, a little bit strange kind of side interest.
Yes.
People are always surprised when I talk to them that I write books about punctuation. But once you get people started and they think, they start to think, they start to pay attention, they do a lot. They do a lot of work for our, you know, harmony, communication, meaning, ambiguity, and all the rest of it. So I think it's great that, you know, we are developing and we are thinking about them.
Yeah, it's a process, you know, like I think language is a process, ongoing process, which reflects our achievements of civilization.
Yes, absolutely. There's a book called How Punctuation Civilized People or something like that. And it's all about how we used punctuation to speed up trade, speed up political communication via paper and so on. So it's very often the small things, you know, not the big, I don't know, wars and so on, but the small things that are the turning points, the kind of silent or like unseen turning points that create history and that make history. All right. Thank you so much for our conversation, Walter. It was really illuminating and enriching to talk to you.
Yes, you're welcome. And I thank you for the invitation. Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. I hope you enjoyed the conversation with Walter as much as I did. And what I would like listeners to take away from, which I also take away from this conversation and previous conversations on the future of punctuation, is that punctuation is not stable. Language and text is not stable. Writing is not, because it's very much connected to technologies, whether that be pen and paper or a stone and a chisel or digital communication, texting, the internet, the personal computer. All of this is still developing. We're still trying to figure things out. We have been trying to figure out communication for thousands of years, and we will do so in the future. And so even though it perhaps looks like our punctuation hasn't changed much in the past 200-300 years, it is still changing. Uses are changing. What we wanted to do changes, and what we need it to do changes. And so I would like us to be curious about the future, curious about our own uses of punctuation in different formats, in different formal or informal contexts to different people, whether we write a little post-it to ourselves or whether we write a letter to our lawyer or our bank or a Facebook statement. So everything really is in flux, and we make it as we go along. And I think those explorations of different signs and those attempts to put emotion into something disembodied, and how to translate emotion back when reading, I think those are really exciting and important, but also very playful engagements with language. We can look at them in a serious way. There's a serious philosophical, linguistic, social thought behind those discoveries or explorations. And then there's a lot of playfulness and artistic engagement with, you know, essentially signs that don't really have a lot of meaning in and of themselves. So I hope you have enjoyed this conversation, and maybe have a listen at the previous episode with Thierry Fétivaux about feeling signs for children's texts. And I will leave, of course, a link to the Typoji in the description to this podcast.